Kathy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, today I have a really wonderful guest on. He's been on before. He's coming on solo today, so I hope that he can handle it by himself. Eric Elfman, hi. Are you there, Eric?
Hi, Patsy. I'm here. Thanks.
Okay. Well, we don't have the yin to your yang, or are you the yang and he's the yin? But last time, Neil Schusterman joined you, and of course, he is, what can I say? It just works with you so brilliantly, and I was so thrilled last time when you were on and we were talking about your wonderful, wonderful series. My favorite, I have to say, is Hawking's Hallway. This part of the Accelerati trilogy. There's Tesla's Attic, Hawking's Hallway, and Edison's Alley. And
right.
I have, when I have talked to writers groups, I mentioned to you in an email, I said, I always use that first chapter in Hawking's Hallway because it gives me such a kick. I love it.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. In fact, Hawking's Hallway just came out in paperback.
Yes, so, I noticed that. So everyone really should get it, and especially writers, because as you know, of course, you're famous for being a great writing coach, and it is always so important, that first chapter. It just has to grab.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that I tell my writing clients all the time, is that the first pages are so critical. The whole book has to be good, but you have to grab the reader from the first page. Otherwise, they won't even buy the book to read the rest of it.
Exactly. And I get a kick out of that every time, as I said, I talk to writers' groups. I have actually stood there in front of the audience and read the first chapter, and I get a little bit dramatic there because it's so funny. It is just wonderful.
Well, thank you. That was a fun book to write. I mean, all three books of the Accelerati trilogy were fun because just working with Neil is a lot of fun to do. And we had a lot of ideas of how to start the third book. But the chapter that we chose, I'm glad you felt that it worked as well as it did. We really did some thinking to come up with that.
Well, I think the trilogy is wonderful.
Thank you.
First of all, I love this type of book, and what I love about it too is that it will intrigue younger readers, and of course, the goal is to get young people reading, and to. When they read these books, I mean, they will be amused, and at the same time, they learn things, and it's all done with so much fun in it that it makes reading joyful.
Oh, I appreciate that. That was our goal, is to get young people to read, of course, to make it interesting and fun, but also teach them something, and we try to slip in some humor that only their parents might appreciate or understand. We have some references, like in the first book in Tesla's Attic, we had a reference to The Godfather late in the story that we figured kids wouldn't get, but if their parents were reading the book, they would get a chuckle out of that.
Well, I think, you know, of course, these are marketed for younger readers, but these are books that any adult will enjoy. And as a matter of fact, I recommend these books often because I tell people you need to just, you know, have that moment in time where you're smiling, you're snickering, you're you know, you just find that little joy that that you and Neil have gotten in your writing. And of course, well, the two of you together are like a powerhouse.
Well, we have a lot of fun with that.
It's like you the two of you are the kind of, you can stick your finger in a socket and boom.
Well, we just enjoy the process. We bounce ideas off of each other, and we come up with these fantastic plots. The story of Tesla's Attic. It takes place in the present. I'll just really quickly give.
Yeah, do.
It takes place in the present day. This the lead character, he's a 14-year-old kid named Nick. His family's house burned down in Florida, so they have to move to a house that they inherited in Colorado Springs, which they'd never seen before. It's this old, sort of weather-beaten, falling-apart Victorian house. Our main character, Nick, finds all this junk in the attic, but he wants to turn the attic into his bedroom, so he takes all this rusted, all these rusted antiques and things downstairs and has a garage sale and sells them all. And he only finds out later that Nikola Tesla, the inventor, used to live in that house, and all the things he just got rid of were Tesla's last inventions. So now he has to get them back. But there's an evil organization, a secret organization of scientists, who are also trying to get their hands on Tesla's inventions. And so it becomes this race against time between the kids and this organization, the Accelerati, to see if they can get all the inventions back.
Well, I think it is such a clever premise. And the nice thing is that it makes science interesting. It makes, you know, it makes you want to learn. First of all, you know, the problem has been for so many children that science wasn't interesting. And it's been great over the past, you know, really 10, 15 years that children realize that science is so much fun. I mean, that is where really their future careers can be in all sorts of wonderful scientific projects. So it's great that you introduce them at an early age to these names. I mean, once they know about Tesla, well, you know, and Edison and Hawking, it's easy to start building on that.
Right. One of the most gratifying things for me is I'll look online sometimes on Goodreads, for instance, and teachers will talk about their students are reading Tesla's Attic for their class, and they're investigating science, and they're creating science projects themselves. It's so much fun to watch that happen, to see that the book really is opening kids' eyes up to the amazing world of science.
Exactly. And that I thought that was a wonderful, you know, something that's so fulfilling for a writer to know that their work is being used to educate and to help people. And certainly these books, I think, are just any parent should just go out there and get these books and really join with their children in the not just the joy of the reading, the joy of learning about new things. So these are wonderful books. And it comes sort of, well, of course, you're talking here of three geniuses, and I, until recently, I didn't know that you were also involved in a book called Beyond Genius.
Oh, yes. That was a book that I wrote with a friend of mine. He's an entrepreneur, and he had the idea of describing Renaissance men, basically, people who are good in more than, who are brilliant in more than one field. And we collected several of them and put them into a book. Their story is called Beyond Genius, and it's also with the hope that a lot of times people who are very talented when they're younger, they seem like they might have ADHD or they might just not be able to focus, but they have to be treated a little bit differently in order to nurture this talent that they have. And it's partly a book to recognize these great geniuses from our past, but also for parents to maybe start recognize that some of the attributes of their own children that they might not realize are there in their early stages.
So what got you interested in that subject?
Well, it was in the course of discussing the history of innovation with this friend of mine who is an entrepreneur and has developed many different products. We just started talking about these different ideas and where they came from, things that other people have developed throughout history, and the idea that people could be talented in more than one field. A mathematician could also be a great musician, for instance, was really interesting to us. So we started to explore that, and the more we discovered the different attributes that these people have, we thought, well, there's definitely enough material here for a book, and we can put this together.
Well, it's a fascinating book. It's available on Kindle. And so it's really nice. I think that it's a great book because it covers, how many people? 12, I think, something like that.
I think there are 12.
Yeah. And so it's a nice book to sort of read, you know, if you're on the train or on the plane, because there's a, you know, they're short enough that you can finish one story at a time. And of course, you talk about some people from the past, like Benjamin Franklin and mm-hmm. Leonardo da Vinci, and of course, Thomas Jefferson and Sir Isaac
right,
Newton.
But I
like the current people that you have, like Richard Branson,
Elon Musk. Yeah, absolutely. We try to cover the whole, we try to go from as far back in history as we can still find information about these inventors to the present. And the people in the present we got to interview. So that was really a lot of fun also to talk to some of these brilliant people and discuss where they got their ideas from and how they innovate. And it was a very fascinating book to put together.
So you got to talk to Elon Musk?
We didn't talk to Elon Musk, but we did talk to some of the other people. We talked to Frank Novo, who was one of the innovators at Nokia, the cell phone company. And we spoke to, I'm looking at the table of contents. We spoke to Quincy Jones. We had a lovely conversation with Quincy Jones. He talked a lot about how he started music, which was just a fascinating, eye-opening anecdotes that he had about how he began in the world of music. We also talked to John Paul DeJoria, who is best known for hair products. But also developed Patron tequila, and is involved in many other businesses as well. So it ran the gamut from everything from hair to scientific explorations to of course the Tesla automobile.
And so you came across you broke down into like 12 traits of Renaissance men.
Yeah, we tried to find out the 12. We discussed the 12 essential traits, which nearly all Renaissance men had in common. And the bottom line definition of a Renaissance man is somebody who excels in more than one field. And so that was our baseline approach, to find scientists and inventors and great thinkers, philosophers who are also brilliant in other fields of endeavor, whether it be music or any other scientific or non-scientific field of inquiry. And one of the other things that Renaissance men seem to do is that they share their ideas. They don't keep them for themselves. They're able to create and share their ideas with the world. Is one of the aspects that makes a Renaissance man or woman.
Well, I think it's a fascinating book, and one that, you know, what happens, you know, with all books is that if nobody talks about them, nobody knows they exist. And so that's why I wanted to make sure while I had you on that I mentioned that, because we're gonna talk to you about writing, of course, and we're gonna talk to you about all of that, but I wanted to make sure that I mentioned this book because I think it's a great read and a wonderful value, you know, $3.99, I think, on Kindle, and just a wonderful addition to a Kindle library because, as I said, because they're relatively short stories, but very, very full stories, I think it's a great purchase, and I want to tell my listeners, you know, get this. It's just a wonderful thing to have on your Kindle library. And it's called Beyond Genius, The 12 Essential Traits of Today's Renaissance Men. And we always are looking to understand the sort of the human psyche and what's behind success. And and so I think this is a great book for people to read, and that's why I wanted to recommend it. Now, in a little while, I'm going to take a commercial. But before I do that, I want to mention to everybody that writers are solitary people generally, except in the case of you and Neil Schusterman. And of course, I wanted to mention too that that you wrote this Beyond Genius with Scott Griffiths. right?
Right.
And so he was, you know, part of the team. And it's nice when you can work as a team in writing. And I enjoy
it,
that.
It makes it a lot more fun because writing is such a solitary occupation that if you have a collaborator who you really connect with, and you and I really click, so we really just have a similar sense of story and character, and our senses of humor are very much in sync with each other. So it just makes it such a collaborative, fun job as opposed to the usual sitting alone in your room for hours on end.
Well, you do have a wonderful sense of humor. We're going to talk about that. What I'm going to do is take a quick break. Then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about writing.
Okay.
We're going to talk about some of your quirky little things on your webpage and a lot more. Okay? So just
great.
Hold on. And we're going to do two commercials, Big Ed, in there. I'm telling him today. And then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest, Eric Elfman, who has woken up early over there in California to be with us today because I really want everybody to hear from him. He is a famous writing coach, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Patsy. Thanks.
Okay, well, you have two websites. First, I want to tell people about the funny website, which is called Elfman World, which is a bit strange, huh? that's just perfect for you because it comes through in your writing, which is what makes your book so interesting. And I'm going to read some of the pages that you have.
Okay.
Unusual pages in your Elfman World. We have gross nuggets, spooky morsels, UFO tidbits, Eric's extras, and brain tissue. And I think those are great pages.
Thanks. I'd written three offbeat almanacs for Random House. Those were early when I was just first starting to write. And so one of them was the gross almanac, and one was the very scary almanac. And I had the almanac of alien encounters. So I used those as the springboards for those pages on my website about gross tidbits. And I just asked people to send in things that have happened to them or things that they've seen that are gross. And so I put up their stories. Or if anybody had a UFO encounter or a sighting, I'll put up their stories on my site.
Well, that's why I wanted to tell people about it, that they can write into you, and you do appreciate
Absolutely. All
of their stories. As a matter of fact, I had an experience today that I'm not sure if it's spooky or gross or just plain scary. On my way to the studio today, I was in the line for the ATM machine. Now, I don't know if you've noticed on ATM machines, they always have that part where they have the Braille, you know, code.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But one never really thinks that people use it for the drive up. Okay. So I am at this, and this is a nice new big ATM machine, and it's really, you know, nice, brightly lit. Everything's beautiful about it. And the guy in front of me opened the door. He was a long time, and I'm on the way to the studio, and I'm not like real patient, but what can I do? And I'm, you know, thinking about you. And I'm trying to smile, and he was trying to do it through the window, and then after a while, he opens the door, and he gets out, and he's touching the Braille. I mean, and I'm thinking, okay, he was just in the driver's seat.
He's the driver, right?
He's the only one in the car, and he's doing the Braille bit. And he was having problems, and I'm trying to be very, you know, and I didn't beat my horn and scare him because he was a little old. And I thought, oh, boy, I really never thought anybody used that. And I was a little bit scared, So I was just glad that he didn't, when he started moving, he didn't go in reverse because I didn't know. Yeah, but
that is unusual that the driver was using the Braille keypad.
First, I think it's unusual that they spend the money on putting the Braille, but you know, for the drive-in. But okay, you know, but that's the first time I ever saw anybody do it. So
that's very strange.
But anyway, so as that was happening, I was thinking about you too. This is we can have another like weird.
Weird incident. Absolutely.
Okay, so I wanted to tell people that they can go to this Elfman World page, and it's Elfman World, and just one word, elfmanworld.com. And I think it's a fun page just to go and to some of these things are really gross, but a lot
some,
of people like
some
the,
are, yeah.
Yeah, some people like this kind of stuff, and I think it's just you know, if you're floating around and you just want a little bit of something unusual, it's a nice sight. But of course,
they're usually funny. They're something that will make you smile, even if it makes you feel like, oh, that's really gross. It's usually some humor
behind
there that leavens it.
Yeah, and the spooky and the UFO are great. And again, you know, if you're going to be just surfing the net and you just want a moment of something to make you smile, you can go to Elfman World. But if you are a writer and you want to get serious and you want to learn, then you have to go to ericelfmancoaching.com because Eric is very well known in the business of writing as one of the best coaches. I have heard so many people talking about you, so many people complimenting
you.
And I will say that a number of people have told me that they've met you over a glass of wine. Now, I don't know what that means.
I'm not sure what that means either.
You know, they find you in a bar. But anyway, apparently you seem to do a good job. So I don't know if they... I think it's at the writers' conferences. I think it's at the workshops. I think when they...
I think there was... I go to the Big Sur Writers Workshop every year, and the faculty does relax after the evening, after the day of working with the writers. We'll meet in one of the agents' rooms and probably have a glass of wine or two, and talk about writing. And I'm sure that's where these people have. I mean, they don't tend to hang out in bars generally, but I think at the Writers' Workshop is where people have had a glass of wine with me.
Well, I think it's nice. It's a nice way to think of you. Okay, I'm ready to coach you. And speaking of Big Sur, of course, this is a fantastic workshop, and I get so many questions from writers. You know, one of the things, it is so difficult for new writers who are just coming up. There's so much to learn. So many things that they have to start understanding. You know, it's the difficulty of finding an agent, of course, is primary. but also making sure that their writing is really up to the level that would interest an agent.
Right, right. And that's key, of course, is to have the writing be at that level. I mean, networking is good. If you're good at schmoozing, at talking to strangers and being yourself, that's a very nice, that's a very positive attribute. But the main thing is that the writing has to be strong in order to attract an agent or a publisher. And that's one of the things that I work with writers on, is just making sure that the story is strong enough, the characters, the voice of the narrative is engaging. Those are all the critical elements that have to go into a book in order to attract an agent in the first place.
Well, you know, it's funny, you mentioned the voice, and I had a writer contact me not long ago, and she said, oh, they're always talking about voice. They're always talking about voice. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. What does it mean? And so I said, well, when you read a book, do you feel that you are almost in communication with that writer, that you, uh-huh, you're on the same level, that writers brought you to a certain point? Do you feel that? And so she was talking about some of the writers that, you know, she relates to. And I said, well, right, this is a good start. You're starting to think about voice. But how would, mm-hmm, you tell writers, what are they looking for when they're saying, find your voice?
Yeah, voice is the most difficult thing to discuss or to really impart information about. It's almost this magical element, and yet it can be learned. I think one of the writers that I work at in their writing, one of the difficulties sometimes is that there's a passive voice. In other words, people use the word "they were," you know, the main character was doing something. So it's almost like describing a state of being is a passive voice as opposed to an active voice. Where just a simple example is the difference between he was running or he ran. And he ran is active. And he was running is more like just describing a state of being. And that can be very passive. Even if you have active things happening, if it's described in a passive voice, it just is a very distancing mechanism. And it keeps the reader at arm's length. And you want to draw the reader in. Voice, I think it used to be called style in back when I was just starting out writing. I didn't hear the word voice used so much, but I think it just comes down to what the way the author puts words together. As you said, it pulls you into the story, it engages you in the character. If it's a close third-person point of view, essentially the author or the narrator is sitting on the main character's shoulder and describing what's happening, and also is able to look into the character's mind and describe what they're thinking and feeling. All of those things go into voice in terms of each story has its own narrative voice. It tells you the events of the story, engages you in what the characters are feeling and hoping for and what their goals are. But if an author has a weak voice or an indistinct voice, it usually goes to being a passive voice, or they might just look at the world that they're creating too academically, and they'll use the vocabulary of it'll be a little bit too elevated for the story. Sometimes I see that where an author is writing about 10-year-old characters, but using a vocabulary that much older kids or adults would understand. And so sometimes the voice has to match the age of the characters so that it can draw in the readership that you want.
Well, you know, it is so difficult for writers now to, there was a time where they were saying, you know, write books in first person, third person, mm-hmm, or preferably in third person. So, but I myself like, for example, when writers can use both in a book.
It's rare to mix them, but sometimes authors are very successful in using both. I think when it comes to young adult and middle grade fiction, books written for kids, it tends to be either first person or a very close third person point of view. Those are the only two that really seem to be published these days. In the earlier decades of the last century, like the 1950s and 60s, when a lot of the classic children's books were written, there was a much more sort of an objective point of view, a third person, a distant third person, just describing the action that's happening, but not getting really into the characters' heads. And so a lot of the writers who I work with, they have that sort of objective third-person voice, which is a very classic storytelling style, but it's not in fashion right now. So a lot of the work that I do is to get the writers to have a much closer third-person. So it is like the narrator is just sitting on the shoulder of the main character, and they only can describe what that character sees and feels and not what any of the other characters are doing unless they're present in the same scene.
Now, for your coaching, your books are basically young adult, but for your coaching, you do adult books too. I mean, all ages.
Yes.
Not limited.
I work with writers of all different genres, different markets, adult novels, memoir, a few nonfiction books. Because writing, basically it's writing, but writing is writing. And so if you're telling a story, you just want to tell that story as effectively as possible. And so what I try and do is help the writer. I'll talk to the writer first. I'll read their pages. I read their manuscript pages first. And I have a conversation with the writer. I have a sense of what they're trying to communicate, even if it's not quite there. But I'll check with the writer to see that, what their goal is, what their intention is. And then I'll try to help them bring out their intention. I usually won't impose my own ideas, but as we discuss their story, if it feels to me like it's just not commercially viable, the direction they're taking, or the story has some element that is not familiar to people, we'll talk about ways to engage readers and bring them into the story. Because I think a story can be about some obscure topic that you don't really know about, but if the character cares about it more than anything in the world, then the reader will also start to care about it, even if they don't know anything about it. I mean, a lot of readers, who don't know anything about Nikola Tesla, we try to engage those readers by describing who he is and showing how meaningful he is to the main character in our story in order to engage the readers.
Well, one of the things I like about your coaching methods is that you do teleconferencing, because many writers... As we were saying, many writers are solitary, and of course, it's nice to work with a writing group in your area. But not everybody lives in an area. Now, of course, here where I am in Clearwater, we have a rich environment of writers, and so it's quite easy to connect with a group. I mean, we have on one Wednesday night there's a group of sci-fi writers. There's several nights a week, there are romance writer groups getting together, and different writing groups all over the place, actually. So it's quite easy to find that here. But it is, and also sometimes it works, perfectly, but sometimes you have to get sort of a little above that level where it's just nice, friendly people critiquing you and getting a little bit more professional level work.
Yes, I definitely feel that. And some of the writers I've worked with have told me that explicitly. They have a writing group that they work with at home, but they wanted a professional writer, someone who writes for a living, to read their manuscript and give them feedback. Because there is a different level of feedback you get, I think, from that kind of session.
But
it does work well. Where I work I have critique groups. I call them telecritique groups because we're all on a conference call. But there are people in all across the country who meet with me. I met with one woman in Virginia, and I had her in a group with another couple of women who were in California, and that worked really well. What we'll do is we'll just exchange pages. They'll send their pages to me. I'll either post them on a private website for the critique group, or I'll just send the pages to the different writers so we can all be looking at the different pages. And then we'll go through them and then discuss them on the phone call. Or also do one-on-one coaching where a writer will send me either a 30-page or so excerpt or their entire manuscript to read. And I'll then spend an hour or two with them on the phone going through their pages. And that's been very successful. Several of the writers I've worked with have gone on to be published. Some have won awards for their writing. And that's very gratifying for me also, because I think one of my skills is that I'm able to tell people what their story needs without offending them. I think that's one of the primary requirements for a writing coach, is you need the writer to be open to feedback, but also I'll just talk about it in a very straightforward way that the writers can hear. And so the feedback helps. And so when they send me their revision and I can see that they've implemented some of my suggestions and it's working so much better than it was initially, it's a very gratifying feeling for me.
Well, I think the service that you offer is really important, because, you know, there's a time before you go out there trying to find an agent that it really helps if you mm-hmm. get this professional level critique. It's a completely different from anything else a writer's going to get. And it's vital. It's vital that you know sort of where you're standing. And that helps really to find that agent when you're going out there with the query letter,
yeah.
To be confident that your work is ready to be presented.
It helps just knowing that your work is that polished. I mean, one of the most gratifying moments in my coaching career was this one woman who had she was a good writer, but she didn't have a strong sense of story. And so I helped her put the story, make the story more compelling. And then she submitted it to a dozen agents, and she got or she sent a query letter, and she got three requests for the book. And so when she sent out the manuscript, she knew that it was strong, and she did get representation through that submission process.
Well, of course, you're available all the time, and of course, and at the Big Sur workshop, which I highly recommend. Of course, it's Andrea Brown is behind this fantastic workshop in Big Sur.
Yeah, I recommend it also. It's one of the best workshops out there because it's all about the craft. A lot of weekend workshops, you'll go and you'll just spend your time listening to writers and agents talking about the process, which can be very useful, but there's a point where you just have to do the writing yourself, and that's what Big Sur is mostly about. There are critique groups where writers, five or six writers, will get together with a professional writer or an agent or an editor, and they'll read their material and we'll discuss it. For each person gets about half an hour or so, and so we'll go around the circle, and then we do that twice. They go and they have revising time, and then they come back, they bring their pages back or maybe another chapter back, and they'll get feedback on their revision. And it is such a useful thing for writers to have that time where they can get professional feedback, go work on their pages, and really polish. Sometimes they just will polish one chapter, but they'll have a dynamic opening chapter where they didn't have it before. And the other great thing about Big Sur is that there's usually half a dozen or so agents that you can meet and have dinner with and talk to, and also editors and publishers from New York are almost always there. So you can meet an agent, and there have been deals that have been done at Big Sur where someone goes with a manuscript and they'll get an agent and they'll get a publisher before the weekend is over. It's not doesn't happen that often, but it does happen.
I know it does happen because it is really the premier. I think it's the premier workshop because this happens, you know, writers are out there trying to find where to go. And I generally hesitate to recommend some of them. I myself have been to some that I thought were a waste of money. Some are just fun if they're you're socializing, and that has a lot of merit to it. But if you're if you're really desperate to improve and want real answers to your questions on how to get your manuscript into shape, Big Sur, and then of course the one Big Sur this year is going to be from December 1st to December 3rd, and you're going to be at that one, right?
I'll be there. Yes.
Okay, and I know Andrea Brown. She has a fantastic website for all of you, for anyone who's writing young adult, children's books, picture books. Andrea Brown is the best in the business. Just a fantastic literary agent. And she gets deals for so many people. It's amazing. And I know she's also going to be doing one in September at Cape Cod. I don't know. Do you get out there?
I'm not going to go to that one. But I will be at the Big Sur in December for sure.
Okay, well, absolutely. It is a wonderful place. People can come and they can have...
It's such a beautiful, magical location. The other thing I love about Big Sur is that we stay at the Big Sur Lodge, and there are no televisions or radios. So when you go back to your room, all that you can do is write. There's not even an internet connection there. So all you can do is write, and people really do produce amazing work there, and the revisions are remarkable sometimes.
And for anyone if you haven't been to Big Sur, it is really a magical place.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
It is amazing. And so I highly recommend everybody. I had one of my listeners wanted to go last year, waited and waited and hesitated, and it was fully booked by the time she was ready.
Because it
is such a wonderful opportunity for a writer to get into this workshop. So I'm going to be reminding people all over the next few months that they have to sign up early.
That's great. Yeah, the Big Sur Children's Writers Workshop. If they just look it up online, they'll be able to find it. And I remember I've been going to the Big Sur workshop for about 12 years. And when I first started, they didn't sell out the entire lodge. But in the last 2 years, every time we've gone, the entire lodge has been sold out to writers for the workshop. So if people want to go, they should try and sign up early for sure.
Absolutely, because the word has gotten out there. I know I help spread the word too, because people ask me, and really it is the only workshop, that and the Cape Cod are the only workshops I actually recommend, because you get the value, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, it really is all about the writing at those workshops. The main portion of the time is spent in these critique groups, and you get immediate feedback on your writing from writers, authors, editors, and agents, and it's so valuable. And the writers who go really do treat it like gold. So it's a very useful workshop from that perspective.
Well, I'm going to put a link to your website on my webpage.
Thank you.
Because, as I said, I don't generally recommend specific businesses. But in your case, I think that your coaching is so good, and these teleconferencing is really so helpful that I know a number of my listeners really could benefit from working with you. And also, you're just fun. So
we do laugh a lot when I talk to the writers. So I really enjoy it, and they do too. So that's helpful. Just to be doing something that you're really enjoying, and to be getting feedback that's really helpful. I think one of the things I do is I point out issues that I see or questions that I have, and then we talk about solutions, and I offer suggestions. And it really does help these writers. So I really would be very grateful for any writers who might need some feedback to come check out my site, and I'll be happy to talk to them.
Okay, well, I will put it on my website, and I will, as a matter of fact, I'll feature this interview on my website so that writers can listen to it and hopefully come to you and start planning ahead so that they can meet
for
you
December.
At Big Sur, because
absolutely.
And have a glass of wine with you, since you apparently like wine.
Indeed.
You're getting a reputation.
That'll be the takeaway from this interview, that Eric drinks wine a lot.
So does Neil Schusterman ever come to these workshops?
He has. He's been so busy lately. He's got so many deadlines right now with his other projects. He doesn't have time to this year, but he has in the past, and he is going to come again for sure, but I'm not sure exactly when.
So do you have any television projects coming up?
Well, Neil and I have been trying to set up Tesla's Attic as a TV series. We pitched it to a production company, and we're waiting to hear back. So we may have some good news in the next month or so.
Well, I think Accelerati, the whole, you know, it would be fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. That was our idea when we wrote it. We wrote it with the idea that it would be fun to translate into film or TV. And nowadays, because of the long-form TV series that are really becoming popular, we could tell the entire series of novels as a TV series and really get into every single moment that we want to dramatize. Whereas in a movie, we'd have to cut it down to about an hour and a half or so, which would be a little bit tricky to do with the first book.
Well, I think it would make a wonderful television series. And I asked you last time if you had sent a copy of Hawking's Holloway to Hawking's.
Oh, you know, Neil and I had talked about it, but we hadn't actually done it. So we absolutely should.
Absolutely. You have to take it. Gift wrap it beautifully.
Yeah.
Think of something very clever. Maybe electrify it or something. So when he opens the box, make it something really spectacular, you know? And send him this book because I think he'll enjoy it. He has a good sense of humor, and I think I would love to have him read that first chapter. He needs something to smile about too.
That's right. Everybody does.
Yeah. So send it to him. I don't know if he's on Facebook. He's probably on Facebook. He does everything else, and maybe you'll land up there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure we'll be able to find him if we. Once we look into contacting him.
Absolutely. Yeah, but do it big style. I mean, do something really spectacular. We have to
put
your thinking cap on and let's think about the kind of, you know, you're going to make a production out of it. You're going to make it really, it's not just going to be sent in a FedEx box. You have to make it, put it in something really spectacular and send it to him. And I know he will enjoy it and it would be fun. Why not?
Good idea.
And he'll send you a thank you note. I think it'd be fantastic. Okay. So
great.
I want to thank you so much, Eric. It was great to talk to you. And
it was my pleasure, Patsy. Thank you.
And I'll get this up on my website and I will tell all of my listeners over the next few months. I'll keep reminding them so that they will come out to, well, either contact you directly and get involved with your coaching or meet you in Big Sur. Okay.
I'd be happy to meet them for sure.
Okay. Well, bye for now, and we'll talk again soon. Okay?
Okay, Patsy, thanks.
Okay. Bye, Eric.
Bye.
Okay. Well, Eric is really a nice guy, and I have been talking to people lately because I have wanted to be able to recommend coaches or workshops that are worth your money. Because it is, if you are spending a lot of money on promoting yourself, you have to just take a moment and really look at where you're spending the money and are you getting value for it? Why I recommend the Big Sur workshop is I guarantee you, you will make friends with important people, with people who are, what's nice, and I've talked to lots of people who have gone to these workshops, it is not the type of workshop where you go and at the end of the day, the agents go off by themselves and the famous people go off by themselves and there's no intermixing. And I've been to some of them. I spent a fortune to go to a beautiful, beautiful workshop, and I thought I was going to be really with really famous people. And this was when I was younger and I didn't know the way some things worked. And I discovered that they came in for their little speeches. They were paid a lot of money to come to the workshop. And they were very nice people and very nice writers and very famous people. But they had no interest in talking to anybody, any of the would-be be, you know, writers, people who wanted help. So at the end of the day, they went off to their area, and we all went off to our area and sort of were mumbling and grumbling that we just spent a lot of money for nothing. So I want you to think about it before you go to a workshop. Check it out. And the one that I recommend is the Big Sur or the Cape Cod, handled by Andrea Brown, who is just a brilliant agent. The only New York agent who has made a really big success and has been able to move out of New York and over to San Francisco. So if you're writing for young adult, children's, or picture books, you must go to her website. And meanwhile, I just want to remind everyone, please, please get involved in the Writer's Digest contest. It's coming up, and you really have to make your submissions now. Go to Writer's Digest webpage and look up the details and sign up, and I think you will enjoy the process, because first of all, you will focus your energy in one direction, and that always helps. And meanwhile, I want to remind everyone, next Thursday, I am going to have a really inspirational program with two very, very special guests. Local author, James Gills, who is going to talk about his fantastic and inspiring and thought-provoking books. And then, finally, I am so happy that Forbes Riley is going to be able to join us. And Forbes Riley is an inspiration. First of all, she was a bookworm when she was young, and so I want to talk to her about the books that she loved. And of course, she is just an amazing, amazing woman. And I know that she will inspire everybody to get in shape for their book tours. And she has all sorts of wonderful advice for everybody. And I'm so thrilled that she's going to be able to be here on Joy on Paper next Thursday. And meanwhile, it's going to be, I think, a beautiful weekend here in Clearwater, Florida. And everybody should just get out there, take a book, head to the beach, or find a nice shady place. If you have not been to the Botanical Gardens in Largo, you must go there. They have comfortable chairs for reading, and you can sit there all day long and just enjoy yourself. So have a wonderful weekend. And remember to find your joy and share it. And make sure that you say something nice to somebody today, and perhaps every day this week for the rest of the week. Say something nice to somebody. And I just want to thank everyone for joining me today. And make sure that you come back here next Tuesday, and I will have another exciting guest to help you learn how to write and to inspire you so that someday you will have your book published and you will be going on a book tour. Bye. Have a nice weekend.